6 seconds left. Halla gets it up top. Marcius over the right. Big shot! Score! Shane Theodore! Vegas takes the lead 4-3! 2.3 to go! Perron to the circle. He shoots and scores! David Perron wins it! Up top for Kopitar. Feet to the right. Shot! Stopped by Fleury!
Shane Theodore is fourth and a huge hit by McNabb. He leveled Arvidsson. Wow.
Here's Howell into the zone. Howell left side, drop pass, big shot, score! That's John Merrill! Merrill puts Vegas on top, 2-1!
And welcome in, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on a Thursday, game day, game number 57. Edmonton Oilers coming to town. They are 23-28-4, 50 points against your Vegas Golden Knights, high atop the Western Conference, 37-15-4, 78 points. Clayton Hamilton here along with Frank Harnish. And we got a special guest in studio today with us for the full hour. You know him well from his show On the Strip, Mark Savard's comedy Hypnosis. Mark Savard, the man himself. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you for having me. It's always nice to talk hockey and to be with you guys here in the studio. It should be a great hour.
Yeah, you know, it kind of seems like a old friends week or something this week. You know, other people are celebrating Valentine's Day, but my best friend from Chicago, Mark, was in town this week. Talked to Daniel DeGrano the other day over at the Beer House. Connor McGay, he came in and joined us yesterday. And then Mark Savard, who I'd seen his show before, but had the pleasure of meeting him in one of the Sticks for Kids promotions that the Golden Knights did before the season. And we've become friends and everything. So, yeah, it's been a good week so far.
Has been a good week. And we should have Jamie Hirsch from NHL Network either Friday, Monday, or Tuesday. So we're still ironing it out with her. But, yeah, we're going to have a whole bunch of folks that we know. And Daniel Negreanu is coming in Monday again. So it's good times.
Wow. It is a full slate. Hockey truly is for everyone.
Hockey is for everyone. It is hockey for everyone a month. Going to kick off the festivities this evening at T-Mobile Arena. Edmonton Oilers come to town. And it is time for your Vegas Golden Knights game day preview. Brought to you by Raikman Plumbing and Air Conditioning, where a flush beats a full house every time. And Frank, those nasty Oilers have gotten the best of the Golden Knights twice this year. They're trying to come in and do it for a third time.
Yeah, you know, they're not having the greatest season out there, but they certainly seem to have Vegas's number at this point, and they have looked good against them. Edmonton, we know that they have firepower. Going to play a little soundbite from Connor McDavid and see what Mark Savard thinks about that, because we know that he's the Oiler expert around. But, no, I mean, they are a good team, and that's one thing. You know, the NHL wanted parity. And they pretty much have it, because literally on any given night, anything can happen. The other day, that was proven when Buffalo beat Tampa Bay. And then Chicago, who is struggling this year, but when they got crushed 6-1 by Arizona. So on any night, if you come out and you just think, oh, well, we kind of got an easy game tonight, and we don't have to show up with our A game, you might find out that you have an L at the end of the night.
You certainly will, and in Arizona go on to beat San Jose. So teams that you don't expect to come up and bite you sometimes do, and one of those is the Montreal Canadiens. They are coming in on Saturday. We're going to have tickets for that game to give away later, so stick around. We're also going to have tickets to Mark Savard's show, Comedy Hypnosis, over at the V Theater at Planet Hollywood.
An excellent show, by the way.
Yeah, it is. It's a fun time, indeed. So we're going to have tickets for that as well. Full day, and we get the breakdown. Down of Mark Savard, and now we have to ask the question that we need to know the answer to. We met you over the summer at Sticks for Kids. You, the Oiler fan with season tickets, couple of beautiful daughters who are clad now in Golden Knights gear. Are you still a house divided?
Well, we are. I am still an Oiler fan, true and true, and I wear my Golden Knights jersey to 39 of the 41 home games, and I'll be wearing my Oilers jersey tonight. Most of my kids are wearing Golden Knights. We went to the morning skate at T-Mobile with the Oilers, and so my daughters took their Oilers jerseys out. They thought it would be appropriate to wear and support the team practicing. And then get this, since I'm friends with a lot of the organization, one of the reporters for Oilers TV on the website is doing a little sound bite that he's pre-recording. After he was done, he hands the microphone to my 4-year-old, and I record her doing her little version of the Oilers broadcast, and she says, "Hi, I'm Laurel. I'm here for Oilers TV," and I ask her, "Who's going to win the game? Who are you cheering for tonight?" And she says, "Golden Knights." So it was, it was a big laugh with all the Oilers staff. They thought that was hilarious.
Okay, so the kids are for the Knights, which understandable. Mm-hmm. You're the Oilers. What about the wife?
She is, well, when we all went to the game, and I guess it was in January, on January 13th, we all went to the game. I had a whole bunch of friends fly in from Canada. There was a big group of us, and she unzips her jacket to reveal a Golden Knights t-shirt.
There you go.
So she switched over to the dark side.
And you should know, Frank, that whenever you ask the wife to choose between the husband and the kids, it's always the kids.
Every time.
I just wanted to reaffirm that here. I didn't know if he put her in some kind of a hypnotic trance to make her remain an Oiler fan or not, but, you know, it's possible. It's possible.
Well, you've seen this team struggle a little bit, the Golden Knights, when it comes to the Oilers. There was the 8-2 woodshed game up in Edmonton. There was the 4-3 overtime victory here at T-Mobile Arena. Is it about the Oilers that they've been able to match up well with the Golden Knights?
Well, and it's a little puzzling because I have to admit, at the beginning of the season, I thought we would be talking about this the other way around. The Oilers would be at the top of their division. Golden Knights would be struggling to, you know, gather wins or even catch a playoff position. But that's not the case. It's completely role reversed. Made me kind of look at the Oilers a little more in depth and go, okay, what's the issue here? They're extremely fast and also extremely slow. They've got a couple of guys who are really, really fast, and they increased their size. They got a little heavier because the Western Conference is a little heavier division than the Eastern Conference. But it turns out that when you put a lot of big guys on the ice, they get a little slower. And that's causing them some problems and some defensive breakdowns. But why I think the Golden Knights maybe struggle is the Golden Knights are really a five-player unit when they move up and down the ice. Everyone really plays well together. The defense really like to come in and support with some speed. But when you put Connor McDavid on the ice, I find that the gap between the forward and the defenseman opens. The defense are afraid to get burned on a quick turnover or turnaround and transition part of the game in the neutral zone. So it pulls the defenseman back a little bit. And I think that when you don't want to be caught flat-footed, so it separates the forwards from the defense a little more because you don't want to be embarrassed with a guy like Connor McDavid that can basically blow by anybody in the league. So I think that that contributes a little bit. They're a little more cautious with how they're playing offensively in the zone. And, you know, that's and other than that, just being a little unlucky because the Golden Knights really do push. They do really work hard. I don't know what's going to happen tonight. It's anyone's game, but...
You know, it's interesting because when you talk about Connor McDavid and you see him on TV and that, you kind of get the feeling that he's at a different level. But when you see him live, then you absolutely know that he's at a different level. If you're even, you're behind. If you're a step ahead, you're probably still behind because he's so incredibly fast, especially with that first step. Gerard Gallant was asked after the practice today if he'd ever seen a player faster than Connor McDavid. And he said probably not, but the two guys that he compared him to were Pat LaFontaine and Denny Savard. And those are certainly two guys. Being a Blackhawk, living in Chicago and having my season tickets back when Savard played, he was absolutely incredible to watch with the spin of Ram and everything else. But McDavid might be even faster than both of them. What do you think about Connor McDavid? Have you ever seen anybody that fast? I know he doesn't have the fastest time around the rink in the All-Star game and that, but that's a whole different thing. But that first step of his is so explosive. It's incredible.
Well, he did win the fastest time at the All-Star game.
No, but I mean the fastest ever that they had there. He won the event individually, right. But he doesn't have the quickest time ever recorded. But that's a different scenario with different ice and things.
Right, so. and that's a top-end speed in that contest. And that's not where Connor really excels. You're right in the sense that it's those first couple of steps. He's so explosive, so incredibly explosive. And what's different is in the skills competition, you just skate flat out. What Connor does is he can do it with the puck. And that's what separates him from anybody else. He's got the puck. He skates at such a high speed while still doing maneuvers. I think he's faster than LaFontaine and Denny Savard. And if Denny was listening to this, he might give me a little jab in the ribs. But I think what Denny Savard had was he was very shifty, and he really had, you know, that short, you know, skate, the blade that was really shifty that could, you know, turn on a dime, these spinoramas, and that was what made him very difficult to catch. He was slimy and quick, whereas Connor, I think, is a little bit of a different style altogether. And I really don't think it's fair. Like, you know, some of the players who have seen him at the skills and they commented on his speed, they're like, he's just in a different league. It's almost like he's from another planet.
Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, Clayton Hamilton, Frank Harnish, our guest, Mark Savard. And Mark, what really I never know. I sort of noticed it a little on TV, but I really noticed it when I got to see Connor McDavid in the rink. It's not so much even his quick first burst. It's his ability to get top speed, decelerate, and then reaccelerate. Like, I couldn't believe how fast he could slow down and then pick it back up again. And it's almost more impressive about how quickly he can slow it down.
The talent of this guy is absolutely unbelievable, and how he sees the play happen two or three steps ahead of what's happening. He knows where guys are going. He has the ability to stop, like you say. He has the ability to get going, change direction. And if you're defending him, I mean, you not only can your brain not keep up, your feet can't keep up. It is just absolutely impossible for some of these guys to pivot, to rotate, to change, get body position on him. And before you can even register what's happening, he's already past you.
You know, it's kind of funny because sometimes when I see a defenseman, when they're trying to defend him, it reminds me of back when Mike Tyson was a young boxer. Guys were beat before they even went in the ring against him. Mm-hmm. And when guys see that McDavid is the one coming towards them, they're so afraid of being embarrassed that they're kind of beat beforehand. Yet there are those out there, because there's always naysayers, and especially in this world of social media and everything out there, that they will continue to knock him because they say he can't finish on the breakaways. He gets breakaway chance a lot of times in a lot of different games. In fact, I think it was somebody like Messier who said that he'd have 200 goals a season if he could finish on a breakaway. Our very own Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace said that he never finishes a breakaway, which is not true. He finishes some, but what does he have to do? Does he need to learn how to maybe decelerate a little bit and not go full bore all the time to start converting on some of the breakaways?
Well, and it's interesting that Messier said that. I mean, because Messier is also referencing when he played. I mean, the goalies were half the size. The equipment was 30% smaller. I mean, there was a lot more holes when you were shooting.
Oh, absolutely. So,
I mentioned this last time I was on the show, that the difference between, you know, the 80s and 90s and players of today is 80s and 90s, they were hockey players. Now they're athletes. I mean, they are tip-top shape. It's about diet. It's about, you know, doing yoga. And they do all of these things that are so important to elevate the level of their play, that these guys are now, they're competing on such a high level that it is difficult, and it's not easy to score.
They're huge athletes. I mean, yeah. 6'5", 6'6", goalies are everywhere now.
They stand up, and their waist is at the crossbar. And so when they bend down and stick their arms out, I mean, there's nothing left.
Well, the way they go post to post when a guy's going behind the net, a wraparound goal used to be commonplace. Now it's hard to get them.
Yep, there's no doubt about that. And the defensemen are bigger, and they're mean, and so on and so forth. So getting back to the goalies, and Connor, he does score on breakaways. He does score on the shootout. He just gets so many of them. And his percentage, I'm not sure what his percentage is, but it's pretty normal. It's pretty normal among the league. But you would expect him at that high level of play be able to really rack up the points. And he's mentioned it. You've heard in interviews he said, I want to get a little better on the shootout and the breakaway. It's not my strong point.
I still think that part of the thing, too, that in this day and age, that maybe guys don't convert on the breakaways as much, or if they get a penalty shot, which are rare, but we don't see the conversion rate. Because of the shootout, goalies work on this stuff a lot more than they ever used to in the past.
That's
you
true.
Didn't have a shootout in the past, and penalty shots were very rare. So they didn't work on that kind of stuff. When they got a breakaway, that was a rare occasion in a game. Now they might go 10 rounds deep in a shootout or something like that. So they're constantly facing it, which means they're constantly working on it, which means they have more video on everybody, and they know these guys' moves and everything. So it's a lot harder to do that.
Right, and not only that, it's interesting you say that they review all these players. If the Golden Knights are reviewing players for a shootout, they're going to look at Connor McDavid, but they might not look at a third liner like Mark Letestu or someone who you may not expect that would be involved in the shootout.
That's why Gerard Gallant used Alex Tuck in a shootout earlier this year, because he knew he had a move, but the other team didn't know what it was. They didn't face him in the AHL.
Right. Two of the guys that are going to be right at the center of trying to stop Connor McDavid are Colin Miller and Marc-Andre Fleury. And our own Chris Chapman caught up with Colin Miller earlier and asked him about what it's like playing with Flower, what it's going to be like to see Connor McDavid blowing by him.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think we always want to see Flower, you know, coming out that far, taking a hit like that. But, I mean, he's an athletic guy, and he's got great instincts. So, I mean, it was a great play by him, and happy to see that he's not hurt.
Did you have a good laugh about it with him afterwards? Like, oh, yeah, you know, good stuff. Or what do you say to him? Do you not say anything to him?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just – I think he's the type of guy, you know, that he's gonna make a play when he sees it there, and you know, he's gonna go full force. So I think on that one, you know, he saw a chance to get the puck, and it was the right play. So obviously, if it worked out, it was a great play.
as a defender, when a play like that happens, what is your role? What are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to follow the guy? Are you supposed to stay with the puck? Or how are you supposed to play that as a defender?
Well, depending where the puck goes, I think you just try and read it. But, I mean, there I was trying to just get behind Flower and cover the goal a bit. I mean, it was open for a bit there. But by that point, we had already, you know, got the puck back, and it was just a safe play, so it was fine.
You very quietly have had a very good offensive season. I think you have 24 assists, 7 goals. Everyone wants to see you shoot when you get the puck, but you've had a lot of assists on the season and some pretty big moments. So what does that do for your confidence as a player?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, it's been going well. The power play's been humming along here, which is a big thing. So we'll try and keep that going. But I don't know. I mean, it's been fun so far. I mean, Huntsie and I have done a good job, you know, taking care of our own end and then looking for our opportunities up ice. So just, you know, trying to get pucks through when you can and keep it simple.
Edmonton presents a couple of challenges for you guys, starting with they've had your number twice this year. But, you know, coming into T-Mobile, they bring a lot of really good players, obviously Connor McDavid. So as a defender, how excited do you get to play a guy like McDavid? And what do you guys need to do different tonight to maybe change the result?
Yeah, we've had a tough time with them. I think, I don't know, I mean, they're a big, big, strong and fast team, you know, and I think – you know, they've had some tough times this year, but I mean they're a good team. So we just got to be aware of their speed, you know, and judge it accordingly, you know, with our gaps and stuff like that. Without giving them too much respect, I think if Connor and guys like that, you know, if you give them too much space, then that's when they can hurt you. So it's just about, you know, keeping your gaps up and trying to limit his speed.
That was Colin Miller talking about Connor McDavid coming into town and what it's like to have Flower behind him, who's never afraid to get out of the crease. We saw that against Chicago coming out to challenge Tommy Wingles. We remember that happened, I believe, in the Pittsburgh game as well. It's always fun to watch him come out, but that's got to be a little bit disconcerting when you turn around and you're not sure if Flower's charging at you or if he's backing up into the goal.
Well, it can make it a little bit disconcerting, but what it also does is it keeps all the defensemen and everybody on the ice on their toes because you don't know exactly what he's going to do. The other thing, if you're playing defense or even if you're one of the forwards, if he makes a save, don't just assume that he's going to glove it and go for a faceoff or something too. You better get ready for a pass or something because he likes to move the puck around and get the offense started. He might not get a lot of assists. Most goalies don't. In fact, it's very rare for them, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't start the action a lot of times. So when you have a guy like that, I think it is good because it keeps everybody really 100% vested in the game because you do have to be ready for whatever he's going to do. He might be in the crease or he might be flying out there like Superman and doing some kind of dive or something like that, like he's sliding headfirst into third base.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right when you say that he initiates the play. A lot of the breakouts, how the transition is going to move up the ice is really Fleury, and he acts like a sixth player offensively in some capacity, and not a lot of goalies do that and not a lot of goalies do it well.
You know, it was interesting because when he still hadn't come back from the concussion that he had earlier this year, we had a chance to see him on the ice a couple times just by himself. And you see him, even with the goalie stick, doing the little stick moves and going between the legs and shooting somewhere behind the back and that kind of stuff. I think that almost every goaltender out there at some point in the back of their mind is a frustrated winger.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I think if you actually put him in equipment, pads and all, and put him up on forward, he might actually score more often than Brendan Lepstick does.
Those opinions of Mark Savard are not necessarily those of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show or Lotus Broadcast.
But he certainly did have fun. You remember the day that he went to the Today Show and he, you know, was dangling and having fun. And you remember on Picture Day, we were down at T-Mobile on Picture Day, and he was just out there by himself practicing his own shootout moves from center ice.
I wish we would have been able to head over to the thing yesterday and see what he did at Cock, because I wanted to see if he was going to do some of the stuff hanging upside down on ropes or something or whatever they had him do over there. So, but I know that you can go to LVSportsNetwork.com. Our very own Helen Yee was over there, and she took some videos and different things, and you can check out some of the stuff because they had a special team day for some of the players over there. So that might be kind of interesting to see what they could. I think some of these guys could do pretty good in those Cirque shows. But by the way, if for anybody out there that sees those shows and goes, I like sports, every one of those people is incredible athletes. And if you've ever seen the backstage stuff and see what they do, they may not be good on skates, but they are incredible athletes. But that probably was a fun day for him yesterday.
There are multiple Olympians that work for Cirque du Soleil. One of them, I know one of the synchronized swimmers is in O. They're people from the trampoline and rhythmic gymnastics and whatnot that are scattered throughout. So high quality international athletes as well.
I think half the former Romanian, Russian gymnasts from Japan and everything else are in the shows here in Vegas. When they retire from there, they leave their countries and come here and live in Vegas. Why not?
Right. Well, the generation of Cirque du Soleil began in Montreal, and the Habs are coming to town on Saturday, and we've got some tickets. Remember, that game is going to be 4 o'clock at T-Mobile Arena, so 4 o'clock on Saturday the 17th. If you want to go and see that game, come right now. Give us a call, 702-876-1340, 702-876-1340. Because Marc-Andre Fleury is Québécois, Cirque du Soleil is Québécois, we will take caller number 29 on the line, 702-876-1340. When we come back, Mark Savard is going to go through the news with us, break down the trade deadline and the power rankings right here on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey. And welcome back, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Congratulations to Derek. He won the tickets for Montreal, that 4 o'clock game. But we've got bigger fish to fry tonight, and that's because the Edmonton Oilers are in town. 7 o'clock start time, and that means Frank and I are going to be down on the concourse at T-Mobile Arena, section 212-213, 6:30 on the air for the pregame. We'll have the intermission reports as well, and then down at the Beer House on Toshiba Plaza for the postgame show. So swing on by, enjoy the game tonight, 6:30 right here on Fox Sports. Clayton Hamilton along with Frank Harnish and comedy hypnotist Mark Savard from the show at the V Theater at Planet Hollywood. Everything's still going well with the show?
Yeah, still 6 nights a week at 10 o'clock. I'm off on Fridays, and so it's good.
It's good. We're going to have tickets for that both today and tomorrow, so stick around. We're going to give those away here in a little bit. There is some news around the NHL, though, guys. We will start in Colorado, where Nate MacKinnon will not play again tomorrow. He has missed 7 games with an upper body injury, but they suspect that he will be back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, he was practicing the last couple days without the red jersey on, so that's a good sign. Some people think that he might even be available for tomorrow, but discretion being the better part of valor with with this young player, they're holding him out again tonight, but he could be back as soon as this weekend, so look for him to be back. And Colorado has definitely slipped a little bit without him in the lineup. With him in the lineup, they were one of the hottest teams in the NHL. He comes back and he's 100%. Do not be surprised if the Avalanche make a run at the playoffs. They've surprised a lot of people this year.
Yeah, it is actually a surprising story, and they got a lot of youth, some good speed. I think it's going to be a team to watch in the next few years.
Other injury news concerning the New York Rangers. Forward Chris Kreider practiced with them yesterday. It was the first time he was on the ice since being diagnosed with a blood clot in his right arm back in December. And Pavel Buchnevich, who has missed the past 6 games with concussion symptoms, there we go, has also returned to practice. Neither of them are expected to play against the Islanders this evening.
Now, they might need some more players as soon as they can for the players that they might be trading or trying to get rid of or something there with the Rangers. So they are making some moves and doing some things out there. It hasn't been the season that they've liked up at this point, but it's always great to see people come back from injuries, especially serious injuries. So, the best of both of them.
It'd be interesting to see what happens with the Rick Nash story.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know where he's going to end up.
Yeah, Rick Nash, Michael Grabner, both seem to be on the trading block, as is Ryan McDonagh, who is day-to-day with an upper body injury. And Mark Stahl, who is out with a cervical strain, has been skating and progressing, but he has not yet returned to full practice.
When the Rangers were here in town playing a month ago or whatever, after their game, I was on a flight. I was heading to the Caribbean for a week, and I was on a late-night red-eye flight leaving that Sunday night. And Michael Grabner and Henrik Lundqvist were on the same flight. And so I was sitting in first class, and they walk on the plane, and they went back to coach, suckers, see ya. So it was an interesting. So I got a chance to chat with them a little bit in the airport, and super nice guys. And sad to say, even though I'm comfortable with my masculinity, Henrik Lundqvist is as good looking in person as he appears.
Since you brought him up, I'm going to do a quick sidebar here. Where does he go all time as one of the goalies out there? Because he's one of the greatest goalies out there, but I don't know that he gets the credit that he deserves sometimes. He's played on some teams that have been decent and some that haven't been all that great. This year, the times that I've watched the Ranger games, he's almost single-handedly kept him in a lot of the games.
Yeah, you can't not consider him being a Hall of Fame goaltender. He is he is so consistent. He plays incredibly well. You're right. He doesn't have a lot of support sometimes. You wish that if he had a better team, he'd have the accolades to go with it, with the performance and the way he plays. I'm a huge Henrik Lundqvist fan. I think he's a fantastic goaltender. So it'd be nice to see him have a little more success.
On the trade deadline and in the trade market, two names have really come to the forefront, and that is Rick Nash of the Blue Shirts. Yeah, I'm going to say the big Blue Shirts, New York Rangers, and Mike Green of the Detroit Red Wings. When you look at both of those guys, who do you see moving first? Did you see them both going? Do you see one?
I think Rick Nash is going to go somewhere. I just don't know where he's going to go, and I personally am not a Rick Nash fan. I feel that he just doesn't care in the regular season, and he shows up at playoffs. But that's not when you need the player to play consistently throughout the entire year. I don't even know what's a good fit for Rick Nash. I think in people who are trying to make a run for deep in the playoffs, he might be, you know, I don't know if he's going to be a big future player. I see him kind of being bought as a rental in the rental market and then moved maybe again in the summer. Who knows?
And for that reason, like the way that you described in there, to me, Green is more of a player that I think could help more teams and that kind of stuff. And he is a guy who does try to show up more. He plays in the power play. He plays on the penalty kill. He plays on 5-on-5. So he will do whatever you kind of ask of him. He is 32 years old now. There's some comparisons to him and Shattenkirk from last season. Shattenkirk was a little bit younger, but I didn't think that that trade worked out exactly well for Washington last year or whatever. But Green is a guy, I don't think he has the same numbers that he had when he first came in the league. He's not as good as he was, but he's still a serviceable guy who's a veteran, who maybe a change of scenery would help him out, where he could help out another team to get a playoff run. Because let's face it, in Detroit right now, it's hard to stay motivated when you know that you're playing for ping pong balls.
Yep, absolutely. And 32 is really not that old in the NHL anymore, not like it was 15 years ago. These athletes are keeping in better shape. They're playing longer. I mean, look at Jágr. Sure, Jágr kind of fizzled out this year, but I mean, look at the age. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was rare for players to play past 38, you know, 40. Now that's fairly common, or at least a lot more common. So now it'd be interesting to see. At 32 years of age, I still think he's a hot asset, and he can help a lot of teams in a lot of ways. So I think, to answer your question, I think Green is probably going to move sooner. He'll find a fit better. Teams will want him a little more. That's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, and I threw the 32 in there mainly because when they're comparing him to Shattenkirk, Shattenkirk's 28 mm-hmm. and him being 32. So he's a little bit older for some of the teams looking at for a long-haul type guy. But I still think he's got, if he keeps care of himself, he could easily have another 3, 4, even 5 years of very serviceable play for somebody.
I agree.
And like Shattenkirk, he's in the last year of his deal. And if you look at what it took to get Kevin Shattenkirk, it was a prospect in Zach Sanford, plus a first-round pick and two conditional picks. Also very similar to when the Toronto Maple Leafs got Tomas Cabrille, and that was prospect Joel Colborne, a first-round pick and a conditional pick. So that seems to be the going rate for a player like Mike Green. So who has that prospect plus the first and the conditional in order to make that move?
One advantage that some of the teams might have dealing with them, unless there's a ton of them, so they keep on upping the ante on each other. But one thing right now with Green playing with Detroit, Detroit's just trying to dump salary cap mm-hmm. because they have buried themselves with it. I don't know how you're up against the salary cap with a team that bad, but they want to get rid of almost whatever they can right now to try to clear some space. Remember, we talked before the season started, Athanasio, who's a good young player, they couldn't pay him the money that he probably deserves. He is playing with Detroit this year, but they're not going to be able to keep a guy like that unless they can make some room for him, and right now they have none.
And you certainly know that as another GM, if you're going after Mike Green, that he's not a guy they're probably going to be able to afford to bring back anyway, so perhaps it's not going to cost as much as a guy like Cabrille or Shattenkirk did. The Oilers are another team that have to make a decision about what they're going to do. They do have some contracts, whether or not they can move them or not. And Connor McDavid was asked about the mood in the room and the trade deadline looming and what that does to both him and those around him.
It's hard for me to sit here and say that guys aren't bothered by it because, you know, it is. And it can be in guys' minds. It would be hard for it not to be. Yeah, I mean, that's not really a question for me. I don't think I'm going anywhere, but, you know, I think for other guys it may be a little bit of a different feeling.
That was Connor McDavid saying, I'm good. Now, the rest of all y'all, not sure. How do you think that goes over in the room? You know those guys pretty well.
I do. And trade deadline is, I mean, these are friendships. These are just not, they're not just playing. It changes the chemistry of the team. And that's really what a lot of people, you know, kind of overlook. They look at the talent of these players, but there's more to it than that. You're disrupting your lives. When you trade players, these assets have families. They got kids in schools. They've built friendships. And now you're transplanting them. And to the management, these are assets. You're moving them around. Now let's get this player and take this player and so on and so forth. But there's more to the gameplay that affects these guys. How does the room chemistry change? The chemistry in the dressing room? Who are you adding in? How are they contributing? Is there friendships there? And that takes a while to build. So there's, when you shake things up, sometimes it has to really be bad to want to shake it up just to shake it up. So it does affect the play. It does affect the, you know, the camaraderie in the room. But what are the Oilers going to do? Like you said, they're kind of sitting where they need a string of a whole bunch of wins to make the playoffs, or they need four or five straight losses before the trade deadline to realize if they're going to be buying or selling. And I feel that they're probably going to be selling, but what can they sell? Like Milan Lucic's contract, he hasn't really worked out that great. I like the guy, but the on-ice play for him, for what they're paying, I mean, how are they going to get rid of this contract? I just don't think they can.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because you talk about the chemistry, and that's why when everybody says, they're asking us all the time, and I'm sure you get posed the question from your hockey fans, what is Vegas going to do? Well, they don't want to mess up the chemistry. So if you make a move, it's got to be somebody like a Ryan Carpenter that they feel is going to fit in with everybody. It's not just what you give on the ice. There's so many other things. But when you talk about Connor McDavid, I find it interesting, too, because I hear a lot of people out there that are kind of blasting the Oilers, and they blast McDavid and Draisaitl for, oh, well, their two contracts are handcuffing the team and they're killing them and that. And I don't think Connor McDavid gets nearly the credit he deserves because he took a lot less than he could have got to leave room in the salary cap. So there would be wiggle room in that. We know it's going to increase at the end of the season, how much we will find out or whatever. But people like to take pot shots at people, and especially young stars and that. McDavid, I think, has taken a lot of unfair criticism from a lot of the media and other people out there. He could have got more. He said give. I mean, what he got is very fair for the quality of player that he is.
Yeah, and in 8 years from now, when he's at the end of that contract, imagine what the contracts will be at that point and where the salary caps will be. So you got to take that in consideration. There's you're looking at the future. They tied him up for 8 years. That contract doesn't start until next year, so they're getting him at a bargain right now. $12.5 million doesn't kick in until next year.
Right.
So if you're the management of the Edmonton Oilers, you're not wanting to be blowing $12.5 million a year and not ice a team that could be competitive. So if I was Peter Chiarelli, the GM of the team, I might be panicking right now. What are you going to do? What pieces can you move? What pieces can you bring in? You've got to create a support staff for Connor. And when you're so talented, Connor makes everybody better around him, but it's hard to choose guys that can actually keep up and play with him. And Connor and Leon Draisaitl are really well as a 1-2 punch, but now you're putting all of that on line one. And so lately Leon's been centering the second line, and he's been, you know, showing some signs of having some success and playing with Connor in the power play. And so they're mixing it up. But I mean, if I was the general manager of that team, I don't know what I would do right now.
You know, you bring up a good point, and I just kind of had a flashback to when I lived back in Chicago. When you say finding players that can play with guys like Connor McDavid, when Denny Savard, a guy that we talked about earlier in the show, when he used to play Pat Foley, who did the Blackhawk games pretty much exclusively back then before he did a lot of the national games and that, when Savard would come down the ice, he'd say, and once again tonight Savard is on the copter line. And he referenced he was a helicopter with no wings because he was down there and the wingers couldn't keep up with them. And sometimes it is hard to get that. Somebody fast enough and skilled enough to play with these guys. If the superstar is there, you can only make other players better if they're good enough for you to make them better.
And sometimes they don't have to be a star, and it always goes back to a guy that I love in Connor Sheary with Pittsburgh. And people tell me all the time, like, he's not a very good hockey player, but he's the perfect hockey player for Sidney Crosby, and he's the perfect hockey player for Evgeny Malkin. And when he's with either one of those guys, he's incredibly effective when other guys don't seem to be.
Right. It's all about timing. It's about knowing when to get on the puck, where to be. I mean, and hockey smarts is not necessarily related to hockey skills. And it's nice to have both, but some guys have a lot more than the other. And when you're playing with high-caliber players like Sidney Crosby or Evgeny Malkin or Leon Draisaitl or Connor McDavid, you need the hockey smarts. You got to know where to be, where the play is going. You have to understand what they're thinking so that you can react according to that.
And certainly some of the younger guys out there, they know the name Wayne Gretzky, but maybe they didn't see him play, and you certainly know it being an Oilers fan. Wayne Gretzky was probably the smartest player I've ever seen in my life. He didn't have the hardest shot. He wasn't the fastest skater. He couldn't go in the corner and get pucks. but he knew instinctively where that thing was going to be all the time, and he had twice as many points as anybody else in the league. He'd have as many goals as the next leading goal scorer. What he did was incredible because he was the most cerebral, intelligent player I've ever seen on the ice.
His perception of what was happening and his awareness of it was almost like he had 360-degree vision.
And you think about a guy, you know, in baseball, Frank, like Eddie Perez, who stuck around in the league for years just catching for Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine because he's the only one that understood what they were doing on that level. And you put him with anybody else and it was a wash, and he's a guy that hit 220 and wanted to stick him on the bench. But he understood cerebrally what those guys are going to do. And I think that's where a guy like Connor Sheary or some of the other players that you see that don't have the high elite level skill but can succeed on those top lines where maybe some other guys don't. There's another question marks for Ottawa. We saw them make the first move. They sent Dion Phaneuf out of town to L.A., but they have other guys that could be available and ready for somebody, most notably Johnny Oduya. Do you guys see him moving? Maybe Matt Duchene, maybe Mark Stone, who said he wants to stay, even though management seems like they want to push him out the door. And there's always the Erik Karlsson situation. What's Ottawa do?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I'm a huge Erik Karlsson fan. I mean, right now they're kind of on the cusp of you keep them. Same thing that happened with the Sedins. I think Vancouver Canucks kept the Sedins too long. And now you can't get what they were worth 3 or 4 years ago. Ottawa, I feel, is in the situation. Do you move Karlsson and really change the future of your team for the next decade? Or do you ride it out and keep him for as long as you can? Because now the value, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's value for him in another few years. But at some point, when do you take a big asset like that and reinvest it in the team for the future of the team?
Yeah, I don't know. With Karlsson, if I can get what I think is close to what he's worth, I move him just because he's kind of made a point. He's made the point of it that he's not really crazy about staying there necessarily. Right. You know, where Stone says what he said, I want to stay here and this and that, he's making it hard on management to get rid of him, or at least if he thinks he's going to leave, he's letting the fans know, hey, it's not on me. I wanted to stay here. I told you guys that, and you got rid of me. Karlsson is basically coming out. I'm not giving a hometown discount. I'm not giving anything else. I'm going to get what I'm worth. And if you don't give it to me, I'll go someplace else to get it. So he's kind of put them up against the wall a little bit. So, and Ottawa right now, they didn't sell out in some of their playoff games last year. Yeah. So the fan base isn't very happy with that front office and organization right there anyhow.
If I was Ottawa,
I don't know what they do.
If I was Ottawa, I'd move Karlsson, try to get a bunch of young blood in there, some guys that can help move the franchise in the right direction, and they need a change of pace.
Yeah, and try to make show the fan base that at least you're trying to do something. Because right now, the fan base up there is not happy with that organization.
Especially being able to move him now where you're going to get a year plus. It's not like moving him in the offseason where you just get a season, or moving him at the next year's trade deadline when you realize you're not going to sign him. But if you're Ottawa and you know that Erik Karlsson seems to be that he's not even chasing a championship, he's chasing a paycheck. That if you're not going to be willing to throw that money out of him, get as much as you can. Use him as the piece to rebuild your franchise, and I think that would be the proper move.
Right, but that's also part of the reason why he's asking for the paycheck. He realized he's not on a Stanley Cup contending team for the next 3 to 5 years.
Well, and the other thing, too, is after what he did for you in the playoffs last year, literally playing on one ankle and the other one just completely shattered, but he didn't get to surgery or nothing like that. He gave everything. There's no way that you can make him look like a villain or anything to the crowd base or anything else out there. This guy is a hero. What he did, even after the surgery, he's still playing on 1.5 ankles right now, and he's still as good as he is. It's kind of scary.
It kind of is. One last one to get to, guys. That is the Vancouver Canucks. They recently had given an extension to Jim Benning, their general manager. Now he has to make some decisions when it comes to the Sedin twins, when it comes to Eric Gunbrandsen and Thomas Vanek. If you are Vancouver, you got to be excited about Bo Horvat, about Brock Besser. You want to move some of these pieces. Are they going to be able to do it?
I think they're 3 or 4 years late on moving the Sedins. So I'm a fan of moving them, get as much as you can for them, a little change of scenery for the Vancouver fans and the players. Start. You got to grow from the beginning again, rebuild. That's what I think they should do personally.
Yeah, it's a tricky situation. The Sedins have been such a part of that organization for so long. But Horvat and Besser are two great young players. Besser this year might be Rookie of the Year, him and Barzal from the Rangers. And we touched on this a little bit yesterday with Connor McGahee when he was in Clayton. But if I could get the Sedins to sit down with me and be willing to take a cut in contracts in that to help the team out and say, look, we can't keep on paying you guys what we're paying you, if they would do that, I would want to try to keep them there just because I wouldn't want the fans to rile up against me and cause some kind of riots or something like that. The trouble with trying to deal them, in my opinion, you have to deal them both. They're not going to allow you to split them up. And I don't know what team is going to take them both because they're not both equal dollar players, but that's what they're going to expect wherever they go. It's a very difficult situation. Should they stay or should they go? Well, they should probably go, but can you move them? Because you have to move the pair.
Right. And they're not going to get the money that they're asking for when you move in the pair. Like you said, it costs you double, and it's double the investment. And I mean,
yeah, for one player who's still pretty good, right, and the other one who isn't.
Right.
All right, well, you've been listening to the dulcet tones of the hockey guru himself, comedy hypnotist Mark Savard, and we have got some tickets. He was kind enough to bring them in to his show at the V Theater, Miracle Mile Shops at Planet Hollywood. We have got a four-pack. They are good for any night. You just have to call the box office, let them know that you want to come, but we're going to give those away right now. Caller number 10, you are headed to the Strip live at the V Theater, Miracle Mile Shops, Mark Savard's comedy hypnosis. When we come back, we're going to take a look at what happened in the NHL on this day several, I guess now many, days and years ago.
A special Mark Savard version of it.
A Mark Savard version of this day in hockey history right here, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey in the Valley. Welcome back, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on a game day. Edmonton Oilers coming to town. Game number 57, 6:30 for the pregame show right here on Fox Sports Radio, 7 o'clock puck drop, intermission report, and the postgame show as well. And congratulations to Joey. You won the tickets to Mark Savard's comedy hypnosis at the V Theater. Have a great time. Enjoy. Volunteer if you get the chance. You will have the time of your life. It's a good show. Fun atmosphere, and enjoy the V, enjoy the Miracle Mile, go have dinner, have a great time.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It is a good time. Great time. And I understand, Frank, that today is a special day in hockey history that has a connection to one Mark Savard.
Well, kind of a connection, because being the big Oiler fan, something happened on this day back in 1999 when Wayne Gretzky was still playing for the Oilers. Ooh. We mentioned the Oilers earlier today. Gretzky made history in the NHL back in 1999 when he made his only NHL appearance in Nashville, one to remember. He set up 5 goals in the Rangers 7-4 win. Now, that was actually when he was with the Rangers, but before that, in 1980, excuse me, was the one that's specially for you. That was the first time that Mr. Gretzky had 7 assists in the game, the most ever in an NHL game. He would go on to do it 2 more times in his career.
Wow.
So Wayne Gretzky, that was an Edmonton 8-2 win over the Washington Capitals. By the way, that night that he played in Nashville the only time, that was also the night with his 5 assists that he moved 1,000 points ahead of runner-up Gordie Howe in the all-time scoring list.
That's remarkable when you really think about how many points that is. And, I mean, he has more assists than I mean, it's ridiculous that anybody
1,000
has points
is like a Hall of Fame career for a lot of guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he had 1,000 more than the leading scorer in the league.
Yeah. It's astronomical, the amount of points. I mean, it's ridiculous. And being a kid, I remember, I mean, I started following the team, you know, really early. I was 10 years old when they won the first Stanley Cup. So from 10 to 18, you know, that it was awesome time to be a hockey fan.
I cannot confirm this, but I have heard rumors that 99 will be in the building tonight.
More than likely.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. So he does come to Vegas occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doesn't always golf with his buddy Michael Jordan anymore, but out here. But they might. Who knows? Even MJ may be in town. They do hang around together. By the way, since Chris Chapman does a great job with the This Day in Sports, I threw in this. This also happened on this day, so I thought Chris might enjoy this one. Martin Brodeur in the year 2000 became the first goaltender in NHL history to get credit for a game-winning goal. He was the last player in the Devils to touch the puck before the visiting Philadelphia Flyers put it in their own net midway through the third. The goal gave New Jersey a 3-1 lead at the time, but then the Flyers would come back and score another goal for the second one, making the official winning goal Brodeur's. Although he didn't actually shoot it in, being the last one to touch it, he got credit for the goal. So Martin Brodeur in the year 2000 on February 15th, the first goalie to ever get credit for a game-winning goal.
That is in this day in sports for today.
I figured it might be because I knew Devils. It was Martin Brodeur, yeah. So I knew you'd throw that in there. That's why I had to throw in something for Mr. Savard, who was so gracious to come in and join us today.
My pleasure.
Yeah, it was always great to see you. Please stop by the post-game show anytime. You are always welcome. We're at Beer House after each and every game, which is where we will be tonight. The end of the Oilers contest. Remember, 6:30 for the pregame show, 7 o'clock for puck drop, intermission reports, and the post-game show as well. Frank Harnish and I will be out there. Looking forward to seeing you. And you're going blue or orange tonight?
I'm going to be wearing white.
White, okay.
Yeah, the Oilers white. My kids will probably be all wearing Golden Knights jerseys, so I'm going to be the odd one on the family. But I'm super excited about the game. They're super excited. I think it's going to be a high-scoring contest.
Yeah, I do too. Well, stick around. We'll be with you at 6:30. But T.C. Martin, the doctor, is next.